From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made back in January in the State of the State address. The governor rolling out an idea that you're going to see tomorrow on your ballot as Proposition 3, known as the Smart Schools Technology Bond Act. Now, this proposition is aiming to be rather specific with how schools can use money, and we're going to talk about that coming up here. Is it too narrow? Is it just what schools need? Who's supporting it? And who's not? We're going to talk to our panel about what we're going to be voting on tomorrow. Jody Siegel's here from the Monroe County School Boards Association. Jody, always nice to see you.
Good to see you again, Evan.
Tom Gillette's here. He's the Regional Staff Director of New York State United Teachers. How are you, sir?
Hi, Evan.
Thanks for being here. And James Brennan is here, the Assistant Superintendent for Finance of West Irondequoit Central Schools. James, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Evan. Nice to meet you.
All right, Jody, I'm going to start with you on this because when I talked to Jody last week, I said, you know, I didn't notice a position that a lot of members of the school community are taking. And Jody told me a lot of people are sort of staying neutral on this, which is your position as well, technically?
That's correct. Okay. Monroe County School Boards Association, the New York State School Boards Association, the New York State Council of School Superintendents, all these organizations do not have an official position on this.
But this is more money for schools, Jody.
Yes, it is. And if this bond passes and the schools get this money, every district will do their best to find a way to use this money that benefits students in the most optimal ways. But we are also very aware that the state is grievously shorting school districts on funding that is required by the Constitution and laws of New York State. And we have been advocating for a long time for the state to meet its current funding obligations, obligations that, because they're not being met, mean schools are cutting programs, are cutting services, are laying people off. Supporting technology is important, and so this money would be helpful, but our first priority is providing the programs our students need. And with that in mind, we would have asked the state for funding in other ways.
Okay, so before we kind of broaden this conversation, let's talk about exactly what Prop 3 would do. Mm-hmm. And I know, Jody, you've got a way to sort of break it down. It would fund, well, first of all, how much money and how would it kind of break down?
It's $2 billion to be bonded by the state. And it's going to support instructional technology in schools, meaning computers, iPads, increasing broadband. Additionally, in addition to the instructional technology uses, the money can also be used to increase school security. And it can be used to build pre-K classroom space, pre-kindergarten classrooms, or to replace trailers that are being used in lieu of classrooms in districts where they don't have adequate space.
Okay. So within those categories, schools would have to use this money?
Right. They would have to use this money. Every district knows exactly how much money they would get.
Okay.
Because the amount of money is actually calculated as a ratio of how much they got in state aid this year. So when the state aid runs came, when the budget was finalized in April, there was a bottom line on every district's printout that told them exactly how much money they'd be getting. And it varied from roughly just under $600,000 here in Monroe County for our smallest district to up to over $47 million for the city of Rochester, and typically $1, $2, or $3 million for most other districts, although it does vary based on how much state aid they get.
All right. Let me ask the finance guy in the room here. First of all, West Irondequoit would end up with how much?
Our allocation would be $1.9 million.
All right. $1.9 million. And again, how would this be paid for?
The Bond Act would be paid back with interest. That's part of the resolution. It allows the state to engage in the borrowing of that $2 billion. The districts wouldn't be paying back directly, but it would be the taxpayers in New York State.
Okay, and there's always interesting questions about how long a note is and what the term is and whether we think that's an appropriate way to go with it. James, West Irondequoit is or is not taking a position on this proposition?
We're not taking a position on it. Of course, anytime we have an opportunity to receive additional revenue from the state, we're gonna use it in a judicious manner towards our existing technology goals in this case. But we also recognize that, you know, there are pieces, questions we're not sure about regarding, you know, the financing part of it. we echo kind of the concept that Jody talked about, where if we had a preference in terms of receiving revenue, we would much rather see a relaxation of the gap elimination adjustment.
Yeah, and again, if you keep hearing GEA, gap elimination adjustment, and some people know exactly what that is, and some listeners' eyes glaze over because that's sort of an interestingly strange term, but I think a short explanation is just that after the financial crisis, 2008, 2009, New York State kind of cut back what schools were being funded with the idea that that would eventually be restored. It has not been restored.
Right.
Schools have been saying that for a long time now they've been dealing with a lot less in-state funding, and the priority is to start there. Before I turn over to NYSET for their view on this, you mentioned you have questions about the financing. What questions do you have?
Well, there are some pieces, obviously. I mean, one question would be, what is, from the state's perspective, what is the debt service going to be? What's the total amount that's going to be owed back on the amount of money? How will that impact future allocations of state aid to schools? If the state is paying back a note with interest, obviously it takes away from the total amount of money available from the state to schools. Other pieces are relative to specifically the allocations for schools. For an example, with technology, we often will purchase our technology through BOCES, which generates BOCES aid for us. My understanding is with this money, but I'm not 100% sure, we would not be able to receive BOCES aid on this money. It would be kind of considered double dipping in that case. So if we don't receive BOCES aid, then the $1.9 million isn't quite as large as $1.9 million because we don't get that additional BOCES revenue.
Okay. Now, NYSET came out and Tom is saying, yes, that you are supporting Prop 3.
That's true.
Okay. And you've heard some of the cautious concern expressed, but why did NYSET come out in favor?
Well, as a former English teacher, I'm tempted to give the etymology and origin of that expression about Hobson's choice. I think NYSET views this very much as a Hobson's choice. And Hobson, by the way, was a livery stable owner in London who advertised having many, many horses available for rent. But when somebody went to rent one, they always got the horse that was in the stall closest to the door. So it was a choice. It really wasn't a choice. And I think NYSET views this in very much the same way. It's $2 billion. It is a very significant amount of money, and many school districts who are underfunded and struggling with providing technology to both students and to teachers look on this as it may not be the preferred way to get the funding, but it's the only choice that we have right at the moment. And I think that combined with the lack of faith that our elected officials will turn around. They could have funded this another way or other ways, and yet they chose to do it through this bond act. At least, especially recent history with the governor and the legislature doesn't make us hopeful that they will go to these other ways. So we're supporting it, and wouldn't be our first choice. But right now, it's a significant amount of money, and it will address equity issues, particularly in underfunded districts, rural districts, some of the large cities, small cities in particular.
So grab the horse closest to the door because the other horses might not be available at all.
Well, they aren't available at all. So
well, but to Jody's question then about the fact that the bigger issues, the gap elimination adjustment and the broader issues of sort of funding parity, why can't the state walk and chew gum at the same time, Jody? Why can't voters pass Prop 3 tomorrow and then New York State as a legislature and the governor next year, whoever is filling those positions, will say, yes, we're going to fill in GEA, we're going to increase funding?
In theory, they could. This hasn't been the pattern we've seen in recent years. I mean, in 2007, the state passed a new funding formula for public education, a clear, transparent formula that identified needs quite specifically and developed a funding plan to support that. But they haven't followed through on it, and they keep pushing that responsibility off into the future. In addition to that, a couple years later, when the recession came, they came up with this gap elimination adjustment to remove, to siphon off a unit of money off the bottom of every school district state aid allocation. So we haven't seen the kind of funding that we believe they should provide and that the law typically would require them to provide. I mean, for instance, last year, the gap elimination reduction just in this year's budget, yeah. I mean, the last budget discussion in Albany, took over $57 million off the bottom line of state aid to Monroe County school districts. Now, the Bond Act will bring us $93 million. So it's, you know, it's a substantial piece to come back to the districts, but the $57 million that was taken for the gap elimination adjustment was money that a district could have made any choice about how to use.
Okay.
Whereas the $93 million, you're going to need to develop a plan. You're going to need to have this plan presented to and approved by a variety of stakeholders in your community. You're going to need to submit it to a committee in Albany, which will then pass judgment on it and decide if it meets their expectations, and then they'll give you the money.
Not very flexible.
Not very flexible.
Okay. Before I get to the phones, and if you want to join the conversation on Prop 3, the Smart Schools Technology Bond Act that's going to be on the ballot tomorrow, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. I happen to have a panel that would all like to see the gap elimination adjustment wiped out, essentially more funding for schools. Tom, is it possible that if Governor Cuomo wins tomorrow, based on his history, that he could say next year, look, we passed Prop 3. Schools can't complain because they got a big influx of money, and we're not going to worry about GEA because we passed Prop 3. Is that possible?
I think it's possible. I think there are some, I'm not speaking for myself, of course, who are so cynical about our elected officials that they think it's not only possible, but it's probable. I think one of the things that has been absent from the political rhetoric, and God help us, and thank goodness it'll be over shortly, is we don't have a lot of candidates, including the governor, with that as a plank in their platforms. The restoration of that foundation aid that was promised to the public school districts 6 years ago. So do I think it's possible? Sure. Probable? Nah.
Well, okay, so some people are saying, look, Tom, this is a trap, that you'll never get that foundation aid back if this passes. That's kind of the implication I'm hearing from some. I'm not speaking for James or Jody, but I'm reading into some other comments I'm seeing in the school community.
Well, and I think that's a fear. I think, unfortunately, if the proposition is not successful, we may hear the same sort of response from Albany, which is, we were going to give you $2 billion, and the voters said no. So this has possibility of becoming a damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Is this a trap, James?
Oh, I can't necessarily comment whether it's going to be a trap or
James
not.
James is going, ask me that question.
But, you know, like I said, if it does pass, obviously schools will welcome the additional revenue source. Our preference, again, would be with more flexibility with the gap elimination adjustment. But we have a lot of good plans in terms of how we would spend this money.
Your district, again, West Irondequoit, is not feeling like if you ended up with 1 point whatever million or whatever it shakes out to be, that it's so narrow that you wouldn't effectively be able to use it. You're saying it's the opposite, that you would be able to use it even within those constraints.
Yeah, I mean, there are constraints. Obviously, it does need to be developed with a variety of stakeholders locally, and then it does have to be reviewed by a state board. But given those parameters, there is enough flexibility within the Act itself in terms of whether you're going to use it to increase your wireless capabilities, whether you're going to engage in some security enhancements. The flexibility of those parameters allow us to kind of work within our existing technology plans, and it would allow us to accelerate some existing plans that are in existence. Plus the idea that you don't necessarily have to spend it in the first year. You could spread it over time. One of the things whenever you buy technology is that it has to be replaced at some point. So if you were to spend it all at once or very rapidly, you would create for yourself a spike in which you would have to replace all that new equipment as well.
All right, let me get a phone call in here as we talk about Prop 3. This is Tim in Pittsford. Go ahead, Tim.
Hey, Evan. I'm so confused here, but that's not tough to do. Where does the bond money get borrowed from? This is $2 billion we're talking about?
Let me ask the finance man, James Brennan, where does
that money come from?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, it's similar to, I would imagine, many public institutions in terms of bonding. The proposition is basically provides the state the authority from the public to engage in borrowing, and they would enter into bonds with a variety of fiscal organizations, municipal bonds, where they would sell it on the market, I would imagine. And obviously, those would be paid back over time with interest.
Yeah.
What does the interest look like typically on this? I mean, I have no idea how high or how low it would be.
I don't know the specific rates, and this is going to be based on some of the reading I've done on it. One analysis that I read was that out of the $2 billion that was borrowed over a period of 15 years, it would include an additional $500 million of interest being paid back on that loan.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That seems like a lot. Am I the only one who thinks
that? I think Tim's asking, is that normal in terms of bonding? I mean, is that what you'd expect to have to deal with? Jody first, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, one of the things about bonds is we never know till after. The estimates I've heard are that it's going to be $135 million a year in interest payments, but they're also that the bonds will be broken up into shorter term and longer term bonds, because if a school district's going to use the money to buy hardware, which has a practical life of just a few years, it wouldn't make sense. And in fact, there wouldn't be a market for a 15 or 20 year bond for something that will be obsolete long before the bond is paid off. So that I'm under the understanding they're going to have to figure out a way to break this up into longer terms for the bonds for things like security or capital expenditures, and shorter for the hardware.
Because some of this technology would only – I don't know all of the technology. Some of it would certainly not outlast the bond. I mean, let me give you a sports analogy, and James can tell me if this is right. This is a bizarre analogy, but it's the first thing I thought of. I remember when the Florida Marlins signed a baseball player named Bobby Bonilla to a contract, and in order to afford him, they deferred the end of the last $10 million over 20 years. And so Bobby Bonilla retires, and 10 years later, they're still paying him $1 million or $2 million a year, and everybody's going, why are we now still paying for something that is no longer playing for us? That's kind of what it feels like with the potential with this bond. Yes or no, James?
Yes. Similarly, I mean, with technology, we all know that technology changes over time, and technology can change very rapidly over time. So if you're talking about things like devices like computers, laptops, access points, which enhances wireless capabilities in the classrooms, these things all have finite lifespans, not necessarily that they break, but they become technologically obsolete within five, 6 years. So yes, for pieces like that, we would be paying the interest back on that bond loan well beyond the lifespan of that piece of equipment.
Tim, one more comment from you if you want to follow up, and then I want to hear what Tom Gillette has to say. Go ahead.
Yeah, no problem. Sorry, I'll be short. We just, you guys are right. We got to do something about this, because to just an average person like me, that sounds insane. I would never take a loan like that. And we're all on the hook, obviously, to pay it back in this state. But my God, we got to figure this out somehow.
Tim, thanks for the call. And so, all right, so Tom, NYSA is supporting this, even though you know that we're not exactly sure, as Jody says, what the final bill is going to be. Are you concerned about that?
Absolutely. I mean, the good thing from the perspective of school districts is school districts are not on the hook for this. And in many cases, they don't have prospects for funding at this level for anything, even if it's very prescriptive in how it can be used. So school districts that don't have the technology, that don't have the capacity right now, are looking at this and saying, well, at least this will help us catch up with, you know, surrounding districts, for example. But it's not an ideal situation.
Okay. If you want to join the program, and I see the phone's ringing again, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Tom, we've been focusing on the technology piece, but pre-K classroom space, would that be a significant portion of where some of this money would go in your understanding?
That's what the Act allows, and I think there are many districts that might look very carefully at that. But again, I think one of the concerns is if the expense of creating a facility or converting an existing building so it can be used for pre-K program, if that gets done and then a couple years down the line, the legislature and the governor withdraw or reduce the funding for pre-K programs. Last year was a good year for pre-K programs in terms of funding, but that could come and go. So you could have a nice facility, but not have the funding to support the program. So I think there are a lot of concerns about that. But again, district by district, they're going to look at this, and it's better to have the option to apply for these funds than not have anything, to have no choice at all.
Do you think it is possible at all that if this fails, the governor and the legislature will then say, okay, the schools didn't get that $2 billion. Now it's time to get more serious about the gap elimination or other funding?
From your lips to God's ear. I hope that's what they think. If it is
to go down.
It doesn't
sound like you believe that's likely.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen because, as I said earlier, they could have addressed this in different ways that didn't require long-term borrowing for what really are short-life pieces of equipment. They chose to do it that way, and I think for many districts it will be very helpful. So we're supporting it. But there are other ways that this could have been done and probably more effective ways.
Okay. Let me get back to the phones with Damon in Fairport. Damon, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the time on the call today.
Sure.
So I just want to make sure that we're not losing fact of the point that New York State in the last 5 years through the gap elimination adjustment has taken away tens of billions of dollars from public education. So now that they're willing to let us borrow $2 billion to pay for technology, it's absurd, right? My district alone, Fairport, they've taken $31 million from in the last 5 years. That buys a lot of technology, pays for a lot of teachers, buys a lot of books. So that's the point we can't lose sight of. The governor and the legislature have an obligation to fully fund education, and they're continuing to take money away from the gap elimination. And another point on the smart schools is that $783 million of that $2 billion is already allocated towards New York City, right? So there's really less than $1.3 billion less for the rest of the state. There's over 600 districts. So the amount of money that's available to individual districts is not really tremendously significant. So I just wanted to make those comments.
Thanks for the call, Damon. Any response? First of all, Jody, what do you think?
Well, he's right. I mean, we've lost over $10 billion in state aid to education over the last 5 years. Fairport, as a matter of fact, has lost the equivalent over those 5 years of one complete year of state aid. And the impact of this on districts has been huge. And it's huge on the local economy, too, because we have calculated that 86% of school district budgets are expended locally and support the local economy. When the state doesn't say, we all pay taxes to the state, but when the state fails to send money back to districts, that doesn't affect the local property taxes as much as it affects what's returned from the state to the community. And so that has an economic impact on our county overall. And so when we look at what the state proposes to do about education, you know, we also have to look at that big picture. It simply comes down to if the school districts were able to identify specifically how they wanted to spend money, they would have organized this differently. It's something that just to follow up on one thing Tom said about the gap elimination adjustment, your question to him, what we can expect in the coming year. We as school board members have worked very hard to communicate to our legislators about how this is affecting their districts. I think over time, our legislators are coming to understand what damage the gap elimination is doing to school districts and by extension to the local economy. So I have some hope that in the coming session in Albany that there will be more responsiveness to some of our issues.
But especially a question for Jody and Tom, has it been absent or too absent from the debates in politics this year?
Well, I've already said I can't think of a candidate that I've heard mention gap elimination restoration as part of the campaign discussion. I've heard a lot about Common Core, and I don't think people who are talking about it really understand it, but I haven't heard anything about it.
Okay. Jody, that flies a little bit in the face of what you're saying when you say legislators are starting to get this more.
I think they're starting to, and actually I've identified three that have spoken to it specifically, which is not good out of how many we have. But I don't think they felt they had the power to do things about it. Some of the legislators who've identified it and seem to understand our minority party members, and in Albany that works against, you know, being a big part of the final decisions.
Let me grab another phone call. This is Mike in Irondequoit. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi. In listening to the program, and I'm glad you had it, especially today in light of tomorrow, we have a really big decision to make. We can either invest in early childhood education or we can invest in prisons. We seem to have no problem investing $100,000, $150,000 a year in incarcerating people, but we seem just very, very antipathetic to invest $10,000 or $15,000 in early childhood education and get rid of the need for all the prisons. You know, we have more people in prison than any of the developed countries in the world. That's a real case of American exceptionalism, isn't it? So I will hang up and listen to your comments off the air. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Mike. Anybody want to jump in there?
Well, I wish that the $2 billion that was lodged in this bond issue, we were able to spend that on pre-K education in all the districts. Indirectly, it could be spent that way, at least to come up with the physical location for pre-K programs, but it's not the same as having it available to fund teachers and fund programs for kids that are 3-4 years old.
Okay. And before I get our short break in here, I'll let our listeners know if you want to join the conversation, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Jody, I'm seeing a number of comments on Twitter and other places where people are talking about Common Core, and Tom mentioned Common Core. Mm-hmm. There is some sense that this is related, that this Prop 3 tomorrow, the Smart Schools Technology Bond Act, is related to paving the way for more testing, more Common Core.
Yeah.
And I know you've been in contact with a lot of people. Have you heard this come up? How is this explained?
Yes, I have heard this. And this is as part of the support for change in education, as part of the reform movement. The federal government established, made funding available for two very large consortiums across states to develop new online testing. And there is an expectation as part of the assessment piece that's related to the reform movement and also for Common Core, that school districts would go to a nationally based these consortium-based online tests. In fact, it was supposed to start to happen this year, that all children would take their yearly tests online. There were a lot of simple practical problems identified with this just from the beginning. School districts don't have enough computers for the entire third grade to be online at one time. Third graders don't have the computer skills to take a test online. You have tests going all morning and all afternoon, just technologically setting it up so you have adequate battery or electricity to keep these machines working. How do you arrange a room full of laptops so no one can see anyone else's screen? It just goes on and on. How do you have enough bandwidth? And in the states where this has been tried, they found just huge problems with the system crashing. I mean, you remember when you're a child taking a test and you have to raise your hand when your pencil breaks and you hope the person who comes over and gives you the pencil isn't scowling at you that you broke the lead? Can you imagine being the child taking the test and having to raise your test hand that the computer crashed? So the lack of capacity to prepare for this is definitely part of the discussion that's been happening. And I suspect that that was part of the reason for this, because this would allow school districts to gear up when they don't have the money to buy the hardware, software, IT people for online testing. Now, New York State has now backed off online testing. They're waiting to see what happens in other states and how this works out. But this is why people who have concerns about the Common Core learning standards and how they're being implemented would also be concerned about this, because okay. this would make part of that possible
okay.
or could.
It could. Does the Monroe County School Boards Association view Proposition 3 tomorrow as any kind of a Trojan horse for Common Core?
We haven't had that discussion per se. Trojan horse. We're aware that this is part of the argument against it. And in the talking points we gave our members, we included that information that, you know, people who are opposed to the way the Common Core is being implemented are very wary of this. Schools have a lot of technological needs apart from solving the problem of how do you put everyone
sure.
online at the same time.
Tom, any concerns that or any feelings positively or negatively that Common Core is somewhat part of the point of Prop 3 tomorrow?
Well, it's interesting that in what was passed by the legislature and signed by the governor and all the documents that have been released, the official documentation, Common Core doesn't appear. However, as Jody pointed out, the need for school districts, based on federal guidelines, to be able to have students take tests online, that's a concern. And whether it's the Trojan horse or not, I don't know. We've had a lot of horses today in this
yes,
conversation. But
I'm trying to think of how many more metaphors.
It's a horse of a different color. But it may be. I think it's a concern that... you know, the state is saying this is money for technology, and once you get the technology, we can test the third graders even more than we do now. And lots of people think they're tested too much.
Okay, so we're going to take a short break. As you're seeing the conversation develop here, Prop 3 tomorrow, $2 billion for the Smart Schools Technology Bond Act. We have a number of questions that have come in online regarding why it was chosen as a proposition, the state of pre-K funding in general, what kinds of technology we're talking about here. We're going to try to answer those questions with our panel, Jody Siegel from the Monroe County School Boards Association, James Brennan, the Assistant Superintendent for Finance of West Irondequoit Central Schools, Tom Gillette from New York State United Teachers. As we look at this debate, those who are supporting it say, you know, that this is an important chunk of funding for schools. Others say that, you know, that you're betting on the wrong horse, that there should be other ways to fund schools. There's another horse metaphor here on Member Supported Public Radio. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, it is Election Day. You might know that. We've got an election preview of sorts and our first hour of the show. And then instead of the rebroadcast from 9 to 11, we have a special live edition of WXXI News and Connections starting at 9 o'clock. We figure we're going to at least midnight as we watch the results come in. All that live coverage Tuesday night. It's all Tuesday on Connections.
Author and internet entrepreneur Cory Doctorow says the current approach to copyright law enforcement doesn't make sense.
What we do with our stuff is our own business, and if we break the law, then maybe we get punished, but just using a product in an unintended way shouldn't be a felony.
His take on what might work for artists and consumers later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's this afternoon at 4 o'clock on your public radio station.
I'm Evan Dawson. Welcome back to Connections. A lot of questions about why Proposition 3, well, why this $2 billion funding idea is being carried out as a proposition for voters to decide tomorrow. And we're going to get to what our panel thinks about why or whether they know or don't know. Jake also says, quote, I've heard it's much more difficult in New York to do ballot propositions as compared to, say, California, where it is notoriously easy. What are the requirements to get something on a statewide ballot? Well, Tom, do you know why it's on a statewide ballot?
Why this is put to a bond issue?
Why this is being presented?
I don't know specifically. My speculation is that the legislature and governor decided that this was more convenient in the sense that they could put this out for the voters to make the call on, rather than, in some respects, it let them avoid providing this funding directly, as they could have back when they were doing the budget back in March of 2014. So, but I don't think anybody has, I haven't heard an explanation of why it went to a bond.
Some people could say, couldn't they, Tom, though, that, hey, the governor and the legislature are giving the power to the voters to decide whether they think this is an appropriate expenditure or not.
Hobson's choice.
He's back to Hobson's choice. Jody, do you know why it ended up in a proposition like this?
I don't know. And I'm sure there's probably a lot of in-depth political explanation for that that I'm not privy to. I mean, you are right. It is a way to put it to the people. But is this isn't the question that people were raising when they went to Albany to talk about their budgets. So it's interesting that this is the solution that came out.
Okay. And when it comes to a question that Mary and others are asking on Twitter about how this kind of or what kinds of technology that this proposition would pay for, let me ask James Brennan, does West Ironicoit know yet exactly, I mean, what kind of technology are we looking at with this kind of a bump?
Well, I mean, there is a lot of flexibility, whether it's devices, computers. It could be also involved in the infrastructure, the switches, the controllers, the wiring that allows those devices to operate in either a wired or a wireless environment. It's also flexibility around security enhancements. For example, in our district, we have in some of our buildings, we have analog cameras for our security. And this would allow us to upgrade them to the more recent digital, which provides a better image for that use.
Tom, when you talk to others across our area about this, what kind of technologies are you expecting this to pay for?
Well, it's as was just mentioned, I think the everybody doesn't have the same broadband capacity. They don't have the same number of computers available to students. School security continues to be an issue, and we have districts in this general region with virtually no school security, very small districts, and we have some with fairly sophisticated security systems. So I think all of these are possibilities, and they are things that certainly students and teachers and school districts can use, and it would be great to have them where they don't exist now.
Jake follows up to say that his concern is essentially in L.A., this proposal doesn't address the long-term cost of upkeep and software hardware management. That's basically what happened in L.A. And is there a feasibility study that's been done on this? Much like Common Core implementation being a flop, money and technology alone is a complete waste if there isn't a solid educational implementation of it. What do you think, Tom?
Well, I don't know of any feasibility study that was done in association with this particular proposition. I think for years, school districts have been wrestling with this problem of technology generally and some of the related issues. It may be a very simple attempt to say, okay, here's the money, and you don't have to pay it back. The state and the taxpayers will pay it back, but you know, beyond that, I think that the caller's points are well taken.
Jody, what do you think when it comes to that feasibility? Maybe there's not a feasibility study for the entire proposition, but as you said, there is a process that districts would have to go through, right, in order to get this funding. So is that part of the way to lay out the plan for spending? I mean, is that
It's
related?
You know, this is a new process for districts once it gets clarified, because normally we don't have to develop a plan locally for something like this and then send it to a different kind of review committee in Albany. There are things that need to be approved by the State Education Department, but in this case, it's the governor's budget director, the commissioner of education, and the chancellor of the state university system who are in charge of making these decisions, which is interesting. I mean, I'm not sure how that came about either. You know, this is a little bit of new territory for all of us, and that's substantially because school districts weren't involved, school leadership and representation wasn't involved in developing the parameters for this.
But to Jake's point, when it comes to the management of and upkeep of the software, hardware that comes out of this, should we be worried that districts could struggle with that?
Yes, I think so. I mean, there are related expenses. Dropping a one-time or, you know, slightly extended pile of money on districts for something that requires continuous maintenance and investment. That's sort of the problem we run into. You know, we complain about unfunded mandates, but we also complain about underfunded things where the state may provide some initial funding, but then it stops, and districts will be faced with, do we continue having technology of this type?
Sure.
And can we maintain it? Because they don't have the money to budget for this right now.
And then interestingly, James, I wonder if this becomes a kind of unintended, unfunded mandate in that you get a one shot of money, you purchase technology that is going to have costs down the road to either replace or upkeep, et cetera. And as we know, there's already the question on the tax cap. What happens to districts there? All the things you have to pay for. West Irondequoit, for our listeners who might not remember, was the only district in the state that tried and failed to override the cap. Is that correct?
We were one of the two districts budget didn't ultimately pass.
Okay, so you tried to override the cap, and we've been hearing from your superintendent and frankly many others now worried that more districts are going to follow suit. Are you worried that while this influx of cash could pay for technology in the short term, it could add a layer of additional cost for the district to take care of, and you're already feeling pinched?
Yeah, the cost will fall to the district ultimately after the initial influx of money. I mean, and this goes back to the concept of the gap elimination adjustment. Had there not been a gap elimination adjustment, ours was about $2.5 million in the previous fiscal year, we would not have attempted to break that tax levy cap, we would have the revenue from the state. So with this, it is an influx of money. We'll welcome it in terms of if it passes to help us further augment our technology plans. But we do also have to be aware of the future budget cycles. We're going to have to replace any of the technology that we purchase.
Okay.
The caller's reference to Los Angeles is cautionary because for listeners who don't know, Los Angeles did a massive technology rollout giving their students tablets. And it has been a failure. The software didn't work. The tablets didn't hold up. There were just terrible problems. And it's caused a great controversy there.
Yeah. In other words, the notion of every student with a tablet or every whatever new piece of technology is nice, but you really have to think it through. Besides just spending money on technology, handing it to students, and imagining kind of a panacea.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the cautionary tale there. On pre-K funding, Mark online was asking, what is the state of pre-K funding and development now? Can we get an update on that? Because, again, this proposition tomorrow, the Smart Schools Technology Bond Act, can provide for some pre-K funding space. And so Mark's asking, after everything that's happened this year, where do things stand with where school districts are, the funding, et cetera? Let me start with Tom. Where are you seeing things with pre-K needs, implementation, and funding?
Well, I think the closest place I would look would be the city of Rochester, and there still is an alarming number of students who are kids, they aren't students yet, ages 2.5 to 5, who are not in pre-K programs. And there are many programs in the city and programs offered by the city school district, but there are lots of kids that aren't being served at this time. I think that the same thing is true in some of the outlying areas, the rural districts, where there just aren't programs there yet. So it's an ongoing problem. I think having space available or funding to create space may be a good first step. But again, there are program costs, and that gets funded in some other way. And right now, that's a bill that the local district would be required to pay.
Joni, where do you see things with pre-K?
Well, pre-K, there are a number of issues. It isn't universal, certainly, but we do know, and research supports, as the earlier caller referred to in general, that pre-K is important for helping kids get off to a good start. It's important for children to be ready for kindergarten, and we know that children who enter kindergarten ready to learn are much more likely to succeed in school than children who are already starting from behind and need to begin to catch up. Having said that, New York State's funding stream for pre-K is a little bit complicated, somewhat confusing. There is aid that that's existed for a number of years and supports small programs in a number of districts. Then this year, as part of the state budget, the state added $340 million for pre-K, but $300 million of that was for New York City, and $40 million was for the rest of the state. We only have two districts in Monroe County who applied for and got that grant, and that will provide a few years of funding for them. It isn't clear what happens after. There's some push for the state education department to somehow consolidate the different pre-K funding programs so that it's clear, and so that it works in a way that is more transparent and helpful for districts to access the aid that's available.
Were you surprised that only two districts in Monroe County applied for pre-K funding?
Not really, because, again, it got to the issue of, well, if they fund this now and we like the program, when the money runs out, I don't remember exactly how many years it is, three or four?
Yeah, 3 or 4 years, I believe.
Then if you want to maintain the program, you need to come up with the money locally.
It's up to you?
It's up to you.
Okay.
Unless the state does another funding plan, but we have no way to know what they might do in 3 or 4 years. So districts who were struggling because of the gap elimination adjustment and the freeze on foundation aid to maintain their current programs weren't ready to jump into taking on yet another program, even if they would have wanted it, because
3 to 4 years from now, that's more. More cost. Yeah. What about West Irondequoit with pre-K?
Well, I mean, we're in a slightly different position. The fact that just this year, our voters approved a capital project to increase our buildings for full-day kindergarten. We are one of four districts in the county that currently operated our half-day kindergarten. So we're moving towards full-day kindergarten. We're more focused on that. But I think some of the same funding challenges exist for both programs. When we do start full-day kindergarten in 2016, we will get what's called transitional aid, but that's a one-year aid increase to help you transition from half to full-day kindergarten. But beyond that, it's up to you, the local budget, the local taxpayer, to fund those personnel costs moving forwards.
Okay, and again, there's a lot of questions I have that maybe are hard to answer because the people who design Proposition 3, the Smart Schools Technology Bond Act, are not in the room right now, but doesn't it seem that if we're serious about pre-K, that ought to be addressed separately? I don't know why it's rolled into the proposition tomorrow. You're smiling, Tom. Yeah. Do you agree or disagree there?
Oh, I agree that it ought to be dealt with in a very direct way by the legislature. And not. I'm in favor of, Jody will hit me when I say this, that's a mandate, if they funded it, I would be so supportive of from the legislature that I would get out the pom-poms, that to fund universal pre-K and do so at a level that made it available to every eligible kid in New York State would be a massive step in the right direction. And the legislature could do that. And the bond issue is absolutely not how they would do it, but so far that there has not been the will to move in that direction that definitively.
Okay.
I would not hit you, Tom, except with my pom-pom if the state were really funding a statewide universal pre-kindergarten program in a way that was real.
It's not real what happened this year?
Well, it's short-term. I mean, I would like to see if they're going to, you know, kindergarten isn't mandatory in New York State yet. And so we really believe they need to deal with the, you know, if they're going to move forward with mandatory pre-kindergarten, they really need to address the kindergarten issue first. And I don't think many people don't realize that it's not mandatory.
But to some degree, didn't we see lawmakers take a bit of a victory lap this year, kind of implying that pre-K is now sort of prioritized, funded, shored up? I mean, to some degree, that was kind of the message that was
right. But that was also, you know, primarily for benefit of New York City. I mean, I can't emphasize how great it is, because you have to remember what happened. Originally, New York City wanted their own ability to fund it with a local income tax, assert on their income tax. And in Albany, the governor said, no, we're going to pay for the whole thing. And so what happened is New York City got this huge quantity of money, and the rest of us are paying for it. You know, people in Batavia are paying for New York City's pre-K. And so I would want to see the legislature take a real look at pre-K and kindergarten, and how to better support public education in New York State.
Last question for the finance man. Do you agree? James Brennan is the Assistant Superintendent for Finance of West Irondequoit. Do you agree that if the state wants to fund something, fund it, get specific about it, as opposed to sort of rolling it into different propositions, et cetera?
Yeah, it does make me wonder a bit. I mean, if you look at some of how the allocation of this bond act is going to be distributed, $783 million for New York City. They also got the lion's share of the pre-kindergarten aid in the last year's budget. So, you know, it does make me wonder a little bit. But at the same time, flexibility does provide some districts with the needs that they need to address. In other words, you don't just have to spend it on one specific thing. And that allows the districts to spend it more wisely.
And Tom, the last message from NYSET seems to be, you understand this is not exactly the proposal that you would write, but it's the best you got right now?
Yeah, basically that's it. That I think that there are many, many districts that would benefit from this funding if the proposition is approved, and they don't have any viable prospects for that kind of funding if it doesn't get approved.
One last thing, Evan.
Go ahead, Jody.
People need to know the propositions are on the back of the ballot. When you get your ballot on Tuesday, it needs to be turned over to vote on the propositions.
Turn it over. Propositions on the back, all three of them. Jody Siegel with the Monroe County School Board Association. Nice to see you. Thanks for elucidating what's going on this tomorrow. Thank you.
You're welcome.
James Brennan, the Assistant Superintendent for Finance at West Irondequoit. Thanks for sharing your expertise.
Thank you, Evan.
And Tom Gillette from NYSET. Nice to see you. Thank you very much, Tom.
Thanks, Evan.
Mike Black is our engineer. I appreciate his efforts today. Thank you for listening. Tomorrow is Election Day. The show as normal tomorrow, and then live from 9 to midnight or beyond tomorrow night. See you on Election Day.